Hey everybody, welcome to Hard Reboot. I'm Jake.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Alan.
And today we are rebooting, or I just said ribbiting.
Ribbit.
Well,
we're gonna ribbit the Wind of the Willows.
Well punned.
Which I'm confident has frogs in it.
It has a frog it and does. A toad, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Both kinds, country and western.
And a rat. And a badger.
Badger.
And a mole.
Mushroom.
A badger.
So, much like last week, I feel like this is also going to need maybe a little bit more research than we normally do, which is really disappointing because none of us did.
I mean, okay, look, I don't want to blow up anyone's spot, but like coming into this, we were like, I'm the one who doesn't do research, ha ha ha. But like, you guys just read the Wikipedia entry on air, so I don't think you can call that research.
Hey.
I don't think that's the same as researching.
Hey. You're probably right.
So The Wind in the Willows is a children's novel by Kenneth Graham, first published in 1908. Now I don't have to worry about changing things up and making it not sound like I read from Wikipedia. Alternately slow-moving and fast-paced, it focuses on four anthropomorphized animals in pastoral version of Edwardian England. The novel is notable for its mixture of mysticism, adventure, morality, and camaraderie, and celebrated for its evocation of the nature of Thames Valley.
I mean, Thames, but yes. And also,
I pronounced that as Thames for the longest time because I'd never actually heard it pronounced. It was one of those things where I had always read the word.
Yep.
Same problem that I had with a vignette. I would call it a viginette because I had no idea how to say the word. Fun fact about Alan.
I know that.
Yep. I learned the word vignette from professional wrestling because.
Nice. Yep. Yeah.
That's what when you intro people and they do like little promo videos, that's what they're called. I want to point out that this book here is like five stories, and that's it. There's like five little things, maybe six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and some short stories.
Mm-hmm.
So not a ton to go on.
No, but I think more what this is probably. Oh yeah, we probably should say we're doing this as a tabletop RPG.
Oh yes, I picked that because I'm a proud fool, and I panicked.
God has cursed you for your hubris, and your work is never done.
And my work is never done.
Ooh, fun fact: the original title of The Wind of the Willows was Willow's Whistle.
I saw that. Better. I like that a lot.
I like that.
Keep that in mind for at the end when we're like, what should we call it?
It's Willow Whistle. We can just put a flag in that right now.
Say it right now.
Okay, so here's also part of the problem. This is deeply mired in Edwardian English values, mm-hmm. which is a whole lot of respect your family, respect your heritage, don't get above your station.
Yeah. A lot of classism. Mm-hmm.
A lot of racism.
I don't know. I was going to say, I don't know if the racism is intended or if it by doing it with different types of animals, the classism comes off as racism.
I don't know that it's
either
intended.
Way, it's not great.
Yeah, it might not be intentional so much as it is cultural and it just bleeds through real heavy.
And it's really emblematic of the Edwardian period of English history.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was written in 1908. So, like, I imagine even if it wasn't intentionally racist, it just is, you know.
Kind of racist,
is.
Yeah.
It was racist because of the zeitgeist.
Because of, you know, the times. Here's the thing about that. We've never had a problem de-racising.
That's true.
Racisming something. We've done it 100 times. Well, not 100. This is only episode 28 or so. We've done it at least a dozen times, I would say.
Fair.
So, here's my initial thought of how we need to do this, right?
Yes.
Little overview of what we're thinking. Like, throw some ideas around. Then mechanics.
Okay.
Because that's how RPGs work, is they have to have mechanics
it's
to
true.
Play.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we need to like think of like a story or so much around that because like,
well, we're kind of,
you know,
we're playing inside of an established world. So there are things that we already know about it that we'll get to.
Yeah.
I do have a question, though. Because we know that the medium is role-playing game, are you doing anything different with the setting?
I was thinking it would be similar to how it's presented, by which I mean how I think it's presented, because I have not read the book, and I only read about a paragraph and a half of it, of the summary. So what is the, like, town world setting like?
Do
either of y'all know?
It's a rural English valley. Like, that really mm-hmm. is it. Okay,
Rat lives on the river and can teach Mole the ways of the river and things like that. So they kind of break it out into the valley as paralleled to England.
Okay.
Have you ever read the Redwall books?
I've read a Redwall book, but it was so long ago, I should probably have just said no.
Okay, well, you at least have the basic concept that in the world of Redwall, there aren't humans. It's just animals right. that act very much like humans, with some, like, stereotypical animal traits slapped on top of them.
That fun anthropomorphized stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That's this. In fact, Redwall draws a lot from this kind of zeitgeist. Unlike a thing like Watership Down, that's just normal, real-life animals. Except literal, they can actual talk. Rabbits.
And, well, I mean, yeah, it's normal, regular rabbits that can talk, but can they really talk, or are they just talking rabbit to each other?
They're probably just talking rabbit to each other, which is different, because these fools can just
talk. But Mr. Toad has a dashing hat and vest. And
is this where the wild ride comes from?
Yes. From the movie. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And Wind in the Willows was one of the movies my parents would play a lot when I was younger. I wouldn't say that I liked it.
No, it's pretty bad.
Because I don't honestly, I don't remember much of it. Okay. Because by the time I started remembering those movies, we'd moved on to Pocahontas because my parents were like, ooh, Native Americans, woo! So
it was, the one we're talking about is The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. And it was it was made in 1949.
There was also a 1980s movie called Wind in the Willows.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That I'm assuming was based on it. I mean, it's good if you don't remember it, Alan, because that stuff is not the public domain stuff that we can talk about unless it's, like, exactly the same.
Yeah.
So, real quick question about scale. There's no humans, but, like, a tree is still way, 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 way tall, right?
There is one human in the original story. She's a little girl, so...
Oh, is it Christopher Robin?
Kind of, but not really.
Ish.
She's a jailer's daughter.
So then there's two humans in the world.
Because Toad escapes from prison.
Presumably three.
We don't ever meet the jailer, so not a problem.
Okay.
But yeah,
but there is a car.
There is a motor car that Toad drives. And yeah, everything is proportional as though they were people.
Huh.
So
a tree is regular tree size. It's not like a regular birch tree is a redwood to them.
Yeah.
Right. And, like, Toad can drive a car.
Like an actual car, not
like
a Toad-sized
car. Like an actual motor vehicle car.
I don't think I like that.
Now, we can obviously change that, and we can shift the scale.
I would like to change the scale, and there's nothing really, I think, mechanically important about that, but just the idea that, like, this is a big human-sized toad kind of creeps me off, and I don't want to have to think about it.
I mean,
well, and I want to say, didn't Badger, like, you go into Badger's hovel? I very much remember it basically being kind of like a hobbit hole.
Yeah, it's in something called the Wildwood, which is something we're going to want to explore, most likely. And yeah,
Mr. Badger.
Badger has basically a hobbit hole. Like, Toad has a proper toad hall. Like, mm-hmm. he has a proper house.
Because he's very fancy.
Sounds like it.
It does get taken over by weasels and stoats, which, to any of our listeners who are familiar with Redwall, you kind of get where they're coming from on that. Just the villains.
Just the baddies?
Yeah.
Weasels are one evolutionary step away from mongoose, and I love those little boys.
Mongoose, so. Great. Weasels, nasty crap.
Also, weasels are very evolutionarily closely linked to ferrets, and I love them cat snakes.
Those are smelly, smelly animals.
Yep.
I do not care for a ferret.
That's why I like watching videos of them.
That is very cute. That is fair.
I just always think of How I Met Your Mother when Ted gets a roommate for two episodes.
Who, they're tube-shaped rats.
Who has ferrets that just bite his eyelids all the time. It's great.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So what, you want to make them like normal animal size? Like ratchet that scale back?
Yeah, and I because I think that incorporates like the size of the animals to each other in a way that is like more satisfying than just like everybody's human sized, you know?
Okay.
Like toads are going to be a little bit bigger than frogs, rats are bigger than mice.
Yeah, I like that.
You know? Badger's bigger than all of them.
Badger's bigger than those, but like it's still a badger, it's still like kind of small. It's just like, you know, badger.
I mean, it is a badger, so presumably a badger, if provoked in this world, will still fuck you up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I'm right thinking. Is that cool with y'all? Is that weird?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the other thing that is important to keep in mind as we're going to start diving into RPG mechanics and things like that is what kind of story do we want the game to be able to tell through its mechanics?
Yeah.
It is a fancy word that I heard called ludonarrativity.
Wow, how dare you?
Right? Where the game itself lends itself to tell a particular type of story.
It's, yeah. To translate, and I need this, like, it's D&D lends itself to murder hobos.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I think D&D is sort of a, like, it is like the, like, base RPG, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're all familiar. Everyone is familiar with... There's a lot of systems going on in D&D that all, like, work together very well. I don't think D&D is a good example of, like...
It's
this
not.
Type of, no. This type of mechanic lends to a story so much as, like...
All these things working together has made a D&D.
Yeah, because you can do anything in D&D because of the way it's designed, which is why I love D&D so much, and every time anyone gives it shit, I'm like, learn how to... I don't know, play better. But like, because like, you know,
well,
it is what you make it at the end of the day.
The idea of it too is you're not going to go, well, a perfect example, Vampire the Masquerade. The book tells you that the story you're going to be telling is all about politics and the dark underpinnings and dark darkness and, you know, Raven, Ebony Dementia, Raven Way or whatever.
Did you really just invoke her in our podcast, Alan?
But what you actually get is a game about a bunch of vampire ninjas that try to kill each other.
Horny vampire ninjas.
I mean, yeah, you're not
wrong.
And
so you have some dissonance there. So... In talking about this, I kind of want to make sure that we know what kind of story we want this game to tell.
So maybe that's what we should figure out first. Because before we started recording, Matt threw out Mouse Guard.
Yes, I did mention Mouse Guard. I think we're going to have to address that at some point because it's going to be the closest equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, and this doesn't exist, like this game does not exist, but a... RPG version of Animal Crossing is what I was immediately picturing.
Okay.
I like that. So it's much more social and...
Yeah, and like accomplishing tasks and helping, but not necessarily like, let's go out and battle the weasels. But like that might be a thing, so we need to account for it. But like...
I like that because it also brings in some of the good part of The Wind in the Willows, talking about like moralism and, you
society.
Know, but with all the gross stuff taken out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The question I was going to ask a question and we kind of cut right to it. So it's fine. The question I was going to ask was, do we want like combat heavy or slice of life heavy kind of deal? And like, that's I think generalized, but it.
Right.
And I like that idea because this doesn't feel like something where you want to have. Like, the option, sure, but not just like, I'm going to go fight a stoat.
Yeah, like conflict has to happen in order for the game to work. And that conflict can be as little as like, hey, can you please go get me a new wallpaper? This is leaning heavily into the Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the neighboring frogs are, you know, farming on our land. Maybe we need to go talk to them.
Yeah, or like... There's a game, and I cannot remember what it's called. I know it's not called Golden Sun Stories, maybe it is Golden Sun Stories. It's something Sun Stories. And the idea is that you play a...
Might be Golden.
You know what I'm talking about, Alan, right? I think it's in our... I think it's in our shared folder. Yeah, in our shared folder. It's basically like you play these essentially witches familiars where you can become a person, but you are an animal. Okay. And the whole game is like you have to go help people around town. It's like no combat. It's like very lighthearted, like game. And I was thinking like something like that where it's not necessarily like there's always a like social problem, but it can also be like I am a seamstress or I'm an apothecary owner and I'm out of this thing. Can you go into the woods and get me that? And then you go into the woods and then you have to find and get it back and whatever challenges you face.
Okay.
You face.
I want to pitch something to y'all. And this might be getting too deep in the mechanics, but I want to pitch this general idea because if we like it, we might be able to just adapt as we're going right to it.
Okay.
So I want to put forward first that we do a GM-less system.
Ooh, I don't like those, but I will let you.
So what I'm thinking is...
You'll have to sell it real hard.
Okay. I think I can do this. I'm only halfway through a beer. We should be fine.
I'm 1.5 in, so who knows where I'm going to go.
And we're almost done with my mug of apple cider.
Someone's got a job on Mondays.
Uh-huh.
Now this guy. So GM-less system, everyone's a character. To get any sort of conflict going, I've been digging into a new-ish, less well-known game called Weave that is based on the tarot.
I love Weave.
Scan cards in, and it like helps kind of randomize some things for you, and you, pun fully intended, weave all the different elements together into a story. So
sure.
What if what we do is you take a deck of cards, normal playing cards, because that makes it super accessible to everyone. They don't have to be special.
Sure.
You flip them over. We have some sort of basic array that's like, first card is who is giving you the problem. Second card is where the problem is. Third card is what the problem is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so are we looking at a table of 52?
52 by 4, yeah.
52 by 4, so we're looking at like 208 entries on a table?
But it's also things like, four of them can totally be Mr. Toad. Like, we don't have to be complicated.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you can definitely double up. All right, here's not my only problem. Here's my couple problems.
Okay.
Some of them are very specific to me.
Okay.
Because I almost primarily role play for a podcast and on the internet, right?
If you've never done that before, listener, it is wildly different than what you do at home.
It is much. Just playing over the internet is different from just playing, and playing specifically for a podcast is different from that.
I can't even imagine how different a live show is on top of all of this. Like,
I can't, but god darn it, do I want to. One so bad. Yes.
Wait, what?
So a live show, do a live play.
I want to do it, but I would also like, I would be having an anxiety attack and Jake basically smacking me and telling me to calm down beforehand.
You and Josh and probably Shannon would have, if it was just Cool Kids table, would all be having co-anxiety attacks.
Yep.
And we I would just be trying to chill you all out
of anxiety.
For me, I would have to
take these shots.
I would have to be drunk Justin McElroy to probably really get into it. Yeah.
Oh yes. Shots.
That I mean, hurts. Yeah, duh. Shots, alcohol, shots, the shots. shots.
Okay.
Playing cards are a tricky mechanic when you're not at the same table, right?
True, yeah.
Because then you are introducing I guess it's not so much a problem if multiple entries is already a part of it, because like if I have a deck of cards and you have a deck of cards and each one represents one thing, then like you could double up and it might get weird, but if it doesn't, then that's not a factor.
Yeah.
Two, GM-less games I find are much harder to play with a purpose.
That's fair.
Unless you like are really in the groove of it, and like a lot of people like GM-less games, like I'm not like knocking them. I just like personally for me, I don't like it when I can't be like, okay, what next? Like, to somebody, or like, if I am one time the GM?
You have to have, I was about to say, you have to have, well, the GM role would shift. Like, you usually have a lead person, but in those kind type of games, you have what's called a facilitator, and, you know, the role can shift and move. So, like, one round, I would be the facilitator, and I would probably be the one drawing the cards and doing that. And then the next round, Matt would do it, and then the next round, you would do it, and then it would come back to me.
That's that. There are some technically GM-less games that were like that. There are also ones that, like Jake is talking about, where it's just the Wild West. You're just playing make-believe with some scaffolding around
it. Yeah, and like I don't like begrudge that. Yeah, like I like that idea, but it is podcast poison. if I can't be like, what do I roll right now? What can I do to roll right now to move something forward? Then like you can get lost in the weeds real quick.
It is called Golden Sky Stories.
Golden Sky Stories. Golden Sun is a not Fire Emblem game for the Game Boy.
It was a lot of fun. It is very not Fire Emblem. It's very much Final Fantasy meets Earthbound.
I mean, it's turn-based. It's turn-based tactics. It's all Fire Emblem to me.
Oh, buddy. Oh, no.
This is a fun digression. We do not maybe have time for it today.
Yeah, we got to do another thing afterwards.
Fun fact, though, my brother-in-law is obsessed with Fire Emblem. So that's almost always what I get him for, like, Christmas and stuff, is fun Fire Emblem stuff.
Easy to shop for.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so let's frame it then with a facilitator, rotating or not. We can get there when we get to deeper mechanics. Can we try that? Like, is that something you're interested in trying, Jake?
That is, I think, a lot easier. I think I just had an idea that would kind of combine regular standard role-playing with the facilitator idea. What if it is, like, I don't want to say built in or implied, but like, what if one of like the main features is that you can have a rotating GM because if you're in a town, so like the cast is big enough that like you can all kind of work together. Like, this session I'm going to be the GM. This session I think we're just doing the facilitator, but writ large at that point though. So I think I can agree to a facilitator-esque GM-less
thing.
GM light game, GM, I guess. Light,
that might be the best word for it, yeah. Okay. Cool. Do we like the idea of randomizing stuff with the deck of cards?
I don't dislike it. I also would like there to be some sort of diced element to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know if that's too much paraphernalia now.
Well, no. So the cards would be used to set the scene.
Yeah.
The dice would be used to
resolve conflict,
determine action.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I like that then.
If not, what you could always do to make it very simple is, you know, shuffle the deck, you know, deal out small decks of cards to people and just say, you know, if you get a red card, you succeed. If you get a black card, you fail.
Or we could go based on the numbers.
True.
On the card.
If we want to make this just strictly all you need to play this game is a deck of cards, which makes it super accessible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't actually have a deck of cards in my house, but that's, you know, I feel like I'm an outlier.
Next time I'm in Austin, I'm just going to leave one there.
Just drop one off and dip.
I've got like four within eyesight of me. Oh, wait, no, that's a tarot deck. Never mind. But I'm weird.
I should have grabbed the Power Rangers cards that I saw on clearance at GameStop.
Womp womp.
Womp womp.
Okay, so let's talk about the world, the setting.
Yeah.
We can dive into mechanics a little bit later. We can just be letting that percolate.
Right.
Are we going to keep it just to that valley, like the River Thames Valley kind of thing?
I like that because it to preface this, the first thing I always ask Alan and I have a podcast called The Cool Kids Table where we play a bunch of different RPGs. Matt's been on. It's very fun. I think it's a very fun show. We just like play a lot of different RPGs. And anytime one is brought up that has like a system tied to a setting, I always ask, is it divorceable so that we can like fuck it up and make it our own? So I don't necessarily think that the setting is super important, But for the purposes of like figuring out how the game should like look and feel, I think having the idea of like the Thames Valley is not a bad idea.
Okay. And we can always include other places in either, you know, a chapter in the book itself, in splat books to come out later.
Supplement
like,
stuff, yeah.
But I think having using the English countryside is a great way to establish everything. Plus, you know, it is pretty, if we make the system this way, it would be fairly easy for them to take that and make it the American South and just replace animals with animals you find around here and then bing, bang, boom.
Well, and
I mean, you could do it. You could just plop it in anywhere. But mm-hmm. I think if we build the game with like a setting in mind, it will be a lot easier to figure out, you know?
Yeah, because mm-hmm. really what we're going to try to do with setting is we're going to have a place. So for our purposes, like a very lush valley next to a big river, we're going to have like probably make up some sort of town, like some main town. And some things that are in there, and all that really is saying, like, if you want to play this somewhere else, great. These are the kind of archetypes you need.
This is what you need to have in the town, or like what you should have or could have. Because like, if you want to change the setting to be like the American South, or you know, the Northeast, where I'm, you know, weird, you know, rural New Hampshire, or a small town in Texas, which is a different kind of South than the South Allen's talking about.
Yeah.
Or like a little town in the Japanese countryside. Like, you'll be able to do that as long as you understand, like,
we have these places here for this reason.
Yeah, and like, this is the kind of thing you do in these places.
Mm-hmm. I'm on board with this.
So we'll just, like, for the purposes of this podcast and the brainstorming, we'll just say, like, yeah, little English valley.
Yeah. Okay. So
on the river.
Yeah. In the main story of, I say main story, that's probably not super accurate. There are just some basic things, like there's the Wildwood, there's Toad Hall,
there's a prison, there's a hospital.
There's an inn called the Red Lion Inn. There's Badger's place, which is like, it's called a
hobbit
set.
Hole.
Yeah, it's called a set. It's a massive underground lair that goes into a buried Roman settlement.
See, I read that a second ago, and that sounds dope as hell.
Yeah, so we definitely need that, and we need, like, we should probably have, we have the river that's where Rat lives and everything.
Right.
So you could probably conceivably have, like, a fishing village on the river.
Mm-hmm.
Right, or, like, a small town.
Yeah, that's built.
Just, you know, built next to a river. Because, like, Edwardian is the same thing as, like, turn of the century, you know, like...
Well, so this is literally the turn of the 20th century.
Yeah, that's true. So just, you know, like no electricity, basically, yeah. You know, or very little. Maybe, you know, that might be a thing that you want to play with is like
electricity in comes the first. Town.
Yeah. In the first, if anyone's been on the Disney World ride, the Carousel of Progress, like the first place, they're talking about how they just got electricity and you can see like the light bulb and there are wires coming from the light bulb that like. Go to the appliances, the couple appliances, because like electricity came out of where the light bulb is, and like that's it. And like, I love that aesthetic. So like, you know, maybe that can be a thing. But like, you know, a small town does not necessarily get it just yet. But like, maybe that can be like a story we put in the you know, ideas to play with or whatever.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why Toad was so fancy is because he had a motor vehicle.
Yeah.
And that was just
like
unheard of.
Toad Hall would probably have electricity, like very basic electricity. We could probably also have like a fair that's in town. Probably have some like fancy school if you want to play a little bit younger.
Have either of you watched Over the Garden Wall?
I've been meaning to, but I have not. No.
Matt just gave me the sky a look that says, "Have I?" And if you have to ask, I don't think you have.
I think I'm confusing it with Over the Hedge, which I feel like is vastly different.
No, yeah, Over the Hedge I've watched the Bruce Willis vehicle where he plays a little hedgehog.
I think I watched the first episode of Over the Garden Wall.
Okay,
because that animation style was gorgeous.
Yeah, it's an animated miniseries. It's like 10-15 minute episodes, maybe 12. I don't think it's longer than that. They are gorgeous, and they have this amazing, like, weird, spooky atmosphere, and the way they play with like time and magic and a time period. Rather, there's no time travel in it, but maybe there is.
I always associate it with Halloween.
It's a very autumn, like if Gravity Falls is the summer, this is autumn.
I love it already.
I finally watched it last year after hearing about it for years and people being like, if you like Gravity Falls, you will like this. And like, if you like Gravity Falls, which I know you do, you will like Over the Garden Wall.
Yep. Okay. Okay. I'm going to put it on the list right now.
But they have there's one episode where they go to like a toad town kind of, and like there's like a river boat and it's all toads on there, but they're not allowed on because they're people, but they have a toad named Jeremy, and so they like use him to like disguise themselves to get on and like stuff like that. Like it's very weird, but it's like dark in a kid way.
Okay.
It's like kid dark, and like there are some like genuinely like frightening things in there. I don't want to like say too much about it because it's like best left just experience. It's all on Hulu if you got Hulu.
Okay.
Highly recommended, especially in the autumn once it becomes autumn times. But like, I'm thinking something like that, since you haven't seen it, neither of you have seen it, it's a little trickier to be like that.
I get what you're saying. Kind of the dark but fun vibe.
It's not necessarily like dark in the like it's not grim. It's just like there is, you know, there can be something spooky going on. I don't necessarily want that to be like the entire thing, but I like the idea of like it's just a regular town, but you can choose to play it either lighthearted or a little spookier, you know, depending on your choices, and just like the settings will just like accommodate that. Like if you go to the wild woods, or you know, I guess in the like if we turn them into archetypes, there can be like there has to be an outskirts section.
Yeah.
You know, of like wherever you are, there needs to be some sort of outskirts. But you know, when you go there, like obviously things are gonna be spookier because you are not in civilization anymore. You are just walking through the woods, and like you could get in trouble out there because there's, you know, weasels and highwaymen and who knows what else.
Okay. Yeah, no, I like that. I like that feeling. That's very good. What else? Okay, so we've got our little town, right? And I'm...
Yeah.
It's feeling very kind of English, so we've got probably like an inn that's a veiled reference to a pub. Probably like
sure, yeah. Absolutely. They sell apple cider year round.
Yep, it sure does have a restaurant on the first floor and rooms above it.
Yep,
like a dock area that probably has a riverboat that comes by occasionally.
Yeah,
I'm just spinning things off the top of my head. There'll be a church because it's that place in town.
For sure.
We need to put a pin in that.
A post office would be important.
Yeah,
a what?
Post office mail.
Oh, for sure, yes.
We'd have, I guess for our purposes, Toad Hall probably on the outskirts of the town or a little ways out of town. Probably a little ways the other way would be Badger's set.
There's got to be like a main street.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Like a good market. Like a square that can hold a fair or a carnival occasionally.
Yeah.
That's kind of it. That's kind of the basics. And then just a bunch of houses.
Yeah. Then like houses and like, you know, that can vary from like a little stone house with a big garden to like I don't know. Here's a weird sort of tenement apartment, but like, you know,
and like the kind of
frogs,
the kind of space that's whatever you need to be in this town. Here's what's definitely going to be there. Whatever else you need, if you need a creepy watch shop, there it is.
Right. Yeah. I think the locations. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Alan.
I just had, because you mentioned the tenant. I just had this idea of Mom and Dad Frog, after they have their tadpoles, they just move into one of those because they had so many tadpoles.
Yeah.
That it's just one family in this giant apartment building.
Yeah. I think the like the locations of the town are not necessarily as important for us to figure out right now because they're kind of proprietary, right? So like if what are we playing today? Because I always, and again, this is because I almost exclusively play RPGs for a podcast, is like, what's the story for this episode? You know, so like you need to make sure that you're
story is there.
Your episode has like an A and a B and a C, like, you know, beginning, middle, end. But also you need to be able to tell that story in a place. So like for this episode, we need an apothecary and a woods and you know, a little glen out in the woods where the thing that we need to get is, and then you figure out from there. So I feel like every location is kind of depend on like, you know, what you want to do, what the scenario is, you know.
And those can be determined by the cards, you know.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, you could just have some generic locations on that array. Just like...
Right.
An abandoned cottage. Ta-da. We don't need any more detail than that. You make it up.
Yeah, then, like, mm-hmm. what do you do there? And, oh, well, earlier we put the six of clubs, and that's...
Weasels.
Weasels, you know.
Yeah.
Or like someone's squatting there and you need to help get them out.
Or, you know, it's, you go there and you find out that it's actually just like a little old lady rabbit and you're gonna help her rebuild it. Ta-da.
Yeah.
That's all very good. All those ideas are good.
I think now we need to start figuring out some mechanics.
We do.
I think we're at about that point in the show.
Okay, so we're back to the original question, or unoriginal question. Do we want it to just be the deck of cards, or do we want dice?
I think if we have a mechanic where the deck of cards exists to set up the story for the, you know, the session, then we might as well
use it.
Just go all in with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Especially if we go with Alan's thing where, like, you deal out a certain amount of cards. And, like, maybe it's, like, a thing where, like, you always have to have X amount of cards in your hand.
Oh, no, that's interesting. You know? Yeah.
So, like, if you come across a problem, you know, maybe whoever is the facilitator at the time is like, all right, I have the rest of the cards. You have, you know, whichever cards have been dealt out, and I have... you know, access to the rest of them, but not necessarily like I don't have them in my hand, but like I have the deck. Like here's the problem. And it's like, well, how are we going to cross the river? Well, I'm going to try this. Okay. Well, and then they flip the card and it's like a nine. It's like, you got to beat a nine, you know? And it's like, whatever, if you have a 10 or a face card in your hand, then you can play that. And then you will accomplish your task. If not, maybe you need to like, figure out how to combine cards,
or even like have the facilitator set a difficulty and say, okay, so for you to get across this river, it's going to be a difficulty of 5. But I'm going to say that because you're getting across a river, this is a body task. So it has to be a black card. If it's a heart task, so something that is social or personal or something like that,
right,
it must be a red card that you play.
Ooh, I like that. Maybe instead of like body and
well, you could do body and mind.
Well, I think
or physical, emotional.
Yeah, it's like personal and social. So like, okay, if you're doing a task that is like you, then it would be a black card. If it is like you're helping, it's like, you know, you're trying to convince someone, or you're trying to like do something.
You're going
with
beyond
people.
You.
Yeah, then you would do a red card. But if it's like, I am going to lift a thing, well, then you have to play a black card above, you know. So
whatever difficulty the facilitator sets.
Yeah. I like the idea of the facilitator not necessarily knowing what the difficulty is. Because if you just like, this river is, and then you draw a card, it's like a two. Okay, if you can beat it, if you have above a black two, then you can get across the river. Or if, like, I'm helping this person across the river, you got to be above a red two.
So,
like, whatever.
So whatever number the facilitator flips, that doesn't change what type of challenge it is. That only changes the difficulty, right?
That's just the difficulty,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then, like, you know, if it's like, you know, you would determine, and I think that's like you know the part of our role playing that we all like, where it's like trying to negotiate the skills and like how you can use things, like.
Okay.
Well, I'm trying to get across this river, but I'm like, we're trying to get across together. So could like I do a red card instead, because I definitely have a red card above a five? Or if it's like, you know, I'm trying to like just force my way across this river with my swimming ability, then you do a black card. You know, the negotiation process is there.
And then if you have a skill that would be related, you could maybe play two cards instead of one and combine their totals.
Ooh, I like that. Instead of having stats, your skills allow you to combine cards.
Have y'all heard of the game Everyone is John?
Yes.
I have not played it, but I've heard of it, okay. Yes.
So one of the things they do is Everyone is John is a great fun game where you all play a different personality inside this one poor man's head. And you like compete for control. You each have these crazy things you're trying to do. Like one game I heard was... one person always had to flip on a light switch, like flip the light switch of whatever room he was in. But when you make your character, you get to write down like three things. So it's like cars or languages.
Guns.
Yeah. Right. So what if we kind of do that? So it's like, I am good at water or swimming, boats. And then you're just like, well, there's a raft. Can I call that a boat?
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea a lot of they're not, there's no like numbers that you can add, but you can combine things. But at the beginning, you figure out what your skills are. So like, I think we should have like the classes be what kind of animal you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So like, I'm a... badger class, so I'm good at digging. So if we need to do something where digging, then I can use that to combine cards if I need to.
So maybe something like your class gives you one or two skills guaranteed, and then you fill in one or two more.
Well, yeah. What if you have your class and then you have your job? So within the society, like I am a teacher. So within teaching, like I have communication and I have like other like soft skills or whatever, but you pick one or two things from your job that you're particularly good at.
Now, would we for
and we can give examples of those within the book, but also be like, you know, GM player discretion. If you think of something that we didn't list,
use it. Yeah, go nuts.
Now, would there be a like list of jobs, or would it just be like,
here are some examples.
Figure out whatever your job is and then like figure that out. I think there should be some examples, but I think we should get loose with job because like I want to be a like ragamuffin, you know, like I'm just like a rascally street kid.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm an Oliver Twist.
Exactly. So like you're not going to have like, I don't know how to work a printing press, but like I'm I can pickpocket and I'm very, you know,
you're wily.
So like, yeah, wily. So I really like that. Hey, I know we TM a lot of things on, like it's the implied is that like what we make on this show is ours, but like for real, if anyone steals this, I will find you.
Cause now I kind of want to make idea. This. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a good system.
Okay. Geez. This is, and we're actually, okay, so we have a rough setting. We have our kind of character creation thing. We stumbled through that. Not stumbled through. We accidentally deleted that whole section.
Yeah.
We even kind of got our mechanics in there. We're at about 46 minutes. What else do we need, guys? Because we already know the name.
Willow Whistle.
Yeah.
Willow's Whistle?
Willow Whistle.
Willow Whistle. That's very good.
It is.
And maybe it's like the default setting
is Willow
the
Whistle?
Town of Willow Whistle. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So that's dope. I have a question.
And it sits under the Weeping Willow. And yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very picturesque.
And this is why if you play with scale, it's a lot better. Because if it was like regular, it'd be like, here's like a... But now it's like there's this giant, you know...
Okay.
They provide shade to the valley, you know?
We haven't actually designed this town, but for sure, the clock tower in the middle of town is actually just part of the tree trunk.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So here's a question I have regarding mechanics is, let's say I am trying to do this crossing the river. Is, you know how there's always like the one example in the book where it's like the room is on fire and like these are the ways you can get across. It's like that's just the river for me right now. So like I'm trying to get across the river by myself. So it's a body. It's a personal task.
Yes.
Or personal check, I guess. So I'm a frog. So I'm amphibious. So I'm good with water. So I can, you know, I can add another card, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does it have to be the same color?
So I have a thought about that.
Ooh.
Okay.
If it's the same color, it counts full. So if you play, like if the card flip was a 7 and you play 2 black 4s, you get 8.
Okay. Right.
But if you play a black 4 as your lead card and then like
a red 2,
a red 6,
okay,
it counts for half.
Oh. Interesting.
My only problem with that is that odd numbers, you'd have to round one way or the other. So
true.
I mean, round down.
I think round down because it's the non matching set.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a little bit of a penalty. I like it.
Yeah.
So we have 2 through 10 that are very easy to parse. What do the face cards do? Do they do anything
criticals.
Extra? Like critical I imagine. Success. I imagine like an ace is just I win.
I think an ace should always be a success. I don't think all the face cards should be critical, though.
No, I think ace should be critical. Okay. I like that a lot.
Like you just win no matter what it is. Yeah.
But maybe if it's the wrong color, you win at a cost.
Well, I don't think you should be able to play it if it's not.
Yeah, okay. if it's the right ace, color. It has to be the right color. Your lead card has to be the right color.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so even if I have like if I'm a frog boy and I can definitely get across this river, but all I got is reds, then like you can't play anything. So you need to figure out how you would make that a social check.
Yeah. What if the face cards do fun things? So the one that sticks out to me is if you play a king at the start of your turn, you make the facilitator redraw the difficulty.
Oh, I like that.
If you play a queen, then then whatever you're doing, you can do collaboratively.
Okay.
And if you play a jack, maybe you can pair with one other person to complete the task.
I mean, that's the same as collaboratively, isn't it?
No. Collaboratively would be like everyone at the table.
What if I don't, maybe for jack, I have an idea for queen.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe if you play a queen, then that lets you play a card of the opposite suit.
Ooh, oh, okay.
So, like, if you only got reds, but you do have a queen.
You can.
And their suit does not matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are just, like,
their abilities.
You know, bonus.
Yeah, they're, like.
And the thing is, like, if you each have your own deck, you're still only looking at 12 max.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I like that.
That I like what that does to the, because that does change like the ratio, which is good because what it is you're like, I've got a hand, I've got two kings though, so 50% of my option now is just like a redraw, which is cool. But if all I have is two twos,
you're still up to creep.
Yeah. So maybe what we need to do there is. One, we do need to figure out hand size because that's important. But what if we need to have a mechanic for ditching cards and like redrawing your hand or something?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Also, I think we should establish that the facilitator plays with all face cards removed.
Yeah, because if you I don't think it should be a remove. I think it should be put it to the side and shuffle it back in.
Yeah.
What if
that it becomes a resource for the facilitator?
What if
I like that
the facilitator removes all face cards except for the jokers?
Oh.
And so the jokers become the wild card, literally, for the facilitator.
Okay, what does that do?
Just radically change the scene. So it introduces something extremely... It's chaos.
Okay.
Interesting.
I like that. Here's my
bird swoops in from nowhere. It is Deus Ex Machina, okay. Almost.
It just gives you, like grounds to do something wild to change the scene in the favor of the facility. Here's my only problem is that this is presuming everyone has their own deck.
Yes.
I think everyone plays from the same deck. So I draw from the same deck that the facilitator uses.
I think the solution is just like face cards become a resource for the player. Face cards become a resource for the facilitator.
Right.
Like it has to be something where the facilitator will draw off the deck after it's all out. The facilitator will then draw the same amount of cards and be like, all right, so you're at the river. I'm going to make that a body 5 and lay it down. But their hand is like 2 red 7s, a 2, and a king. So they can be like, oh, you got across that river? Well, now the flood just came down. Or like, uh-oh, there's an out-of-control raft coming at you. So you can like throw the card to trigger something that changes
yeah
to complicate the scene
yeah
I want to go back to what Jax can do.
Okay.
I don't think they should be able to let you like work with someone. I think that should be its own mechanic.
That needs to be I think that needs to be a default thing, like
because you should be able to work together. Yeah. Right, like I feel like that shouldn't be a thing. You should need a special what if you play a Jax, it halves the
difficulty cost.
The difficulty.
I like that.
For everyone.
For everyone. It just like it.
For this scene, the difficulty is halved.
Well, for this task, not necessarily the scene. Yeah.
Should we actually switch that with King? Because I feel like a redraw on the pile is a little bit less good.
That's kind of Jacky. Yeah.
And the.
Because the Jack is also called the Knave, and that's kind of like tricksy.
Yeah.
Maybe we should only refer to Jacks as knaves in the books just to confuse people.
That's very good. Shit, do we need anything else?
Let's just figure out teamwork mechanics.
Okay. I mean, default should be you can do it. If you can sell the task, you can do it.
Maybe I want the mechanics. I want like the numbers to matter. Yeah. 'Cause that's like when I play an RPG, I want to be able to like get around things without having to roll, but I also want to be able when we use the rules for them to matter.
No,
you're
right.
That's how I like. Yeah. So like, what if?
Okay. Let me set an example here. Let's say we're crossing the river.
My favorite.
The difficulty that gets flipped out or played from the facilitator. I'm going to set this crazy high just so that we have some room to play around in. Is going to be a black 10.
Okay.
So literally the highest difficulty.
Sure.
That's our setting. So how are we going to teamwork this? Because let's assume none of us have a black 10 just in our hand.
Right. So my initial idea, and I don't know if this is viable, so just, you know, let me throw this spaghetti at the refrigerator, is you double the difficulty, but you both can play a card. So like, for a 10, that won't help, right? But if it's less than that, if it's like an 8, now it's a 16, but I can play a 6 and you can play a 10.
What if instead of that, I'm just going to pull a couple cards out here real fast. So we have the 10. I'm going to just so you and Alan are the players for this. Alan's going to help you cross the river. And you're like, I can't do a 10, Alan. Help.
I don't have it. I don't have it in me.
So the facilitator can go, okay, cool. Y'all want to work together? I'm going
flip
to
another card.
Blind to draw a card. So now it's a 14.
Okay. And now collectively we have to be able to
beat a 14
to meet that.
Yeah. So basically, and it's the same thing. So the lead is 10. So for people that can do it individually, 10 is that number. But if you need to work together with one other person, it has become 14.
For every person involved, you draw a card.
Yeah.
Right. I like that a lot. Also, would it automatically make that a red check because you are – it's not personal anymore. It is technically with somebody.
I think if you're going to cooperate – the first person, the person whose challenge this was, is always going to be the same color. Other people can be either one depending on what they're in story doing.
Right. So if they're helping you build something. Well, this kind of goes back to why I said body and heart. Is if it's something physical versus something emotional or social.
I think that's the same. That's kind of the same as personal and interpersonal, though, right? Like when you think about it, like. Because I'm not going to be making any, like, social challenges just by myself, right?
Right, but the social challenges that you're talking, like, with this assisting and helping the raft, yes, it's interpersonal, but let's say that one of the, I don't know why armadillo just jumped into my head, but let's say an armadillo is helping to build the raft.
Let's say a scorpion and a toad are trying to cross a river.
Is helping build the raft using its little claws. So it's using its body to help you. It can play a black card. Versus the burrow owl who read about, you know, currents and things can help you by planning out when is best because they know when the current's going to be strong. So that would be a red check because they're using their heart and not their body. Heart/mind.
Right.
I think part of the problem is we're getting caught up on that language and we're saying the same things.
I think that's also
so I think, right, yes, they can use both. It's like Matt said earlier, they can use either color, but it must be dictated by what they say that they are doing. It's very much what I call the diplomacy check problem. When somebody rolls a natural 20 and is just like, yeah, I do it. It's like, yeah, but you got to talk.
You got to say
it. You rolled an 18. That's great. But if you tell this guard to go fuck themselves, they're not going to like say, okay, cool. Let me open this door for you.
You did get a 20. Yeah. All right, let me change the scenario. Okay. Let me flip it. Let me take the deck and move it over to me. So I'm the facilitator now. What's up, jerks?
God, we're all going
to
die.
Welcome to Jake Town. You're going to drown.
The river is now made of fire.
Oh, boy.
The two of you come to a river.
Okay.
Going
right?
Down, Hades Town, down, down.
I flip it way down on the ground. I flip a 10, right?
Yeah.
So difficulty to cross is a 10. You both have to get across.
Okay.
But if Matt can get across with a 10 and Alan can't, then if Alan wants to get help from Matt, you still both are trying to accomplish the same task. So it's not necessarily like you're helping so much as like you're both doing the task now.
Okay, so let me pitch this then.
Does that make any sense? I feel like that didn't make any sense.
No, I get what you're saying.
Okay.
I think once that you decide that you're going to do it collectively or get help from someone, we have to have a cost here. I think somehow there has to be a cost for it a little bit somewhere.
Yeah.
But I think at that point,
instead of a cost there, a benefit to doing it alone? Maybe it's management of stuff. If you do it collaboratively, you have to pay more cards.
Well,
so it's resource management.
What if it's just as simple as if we get to the river, it's a 10. I don't have a 10. I have a 6. And you flip the next card, it's a 4. So it's a 14 total, right?
And I have an 8.
And you have an 8. So we can make this happen. What if working together, there isn't a penalty? What if it's just you can use either color because it is both personal and interpersonal? Because like it's I need to cross the river, but also I need help.
Okay.
And
yeah.
And so like I could play a red and you could play a black.
So
or we could both play reds or both blacks, whichever.
Let's fall back to what Alan said. that's great. That's awesome. We can absolutely do that. We just have to sell what we're doing in story.
Yeah.
You just have to be like, I'm going to use my red card to help Jake, and I'm doing this thing.
I also think that this could be a good way to create other narrative resources. So like a story point. Okay. So one of the things that I like about the Star Wars Edge of the Empire or the Genesis system is the use of force points or plot points, especially the Star Wars. They have force points, light side, dark side, and they can be used for players and GM. So if a player uses a light side point, it flips over to a dark side point. The GM can use a dark side point and it flips over to a light side point.
Okay.
So maybe these moments of teamwork shift the balance of a narrative resource that, you know, we had said earlier that it might be the Joker, but maybe it's something that is, you know, these are points or physical chips on the table that the narrator can flip over to make something dramatic happen, or it is a resource that a player can use to dramatically alter the story in their favor.
How would the storyteller, I think instead of facilitator, we should just say storyteller, because yeah. Facilitator sounds very
academic.
Yeah.
Yeah. How would the storyteller get these points then?
Well, you start the game. The way it works in Star Wars is everybody rolls specific dice, but for this, you could start the game with 5 story points. And
each or total for the party?
Total.
Total for the entire table.
Okay.
And that number does not change. It just depends on who uses them as to what they become. So maybe it's at the beginning of the game, the storyteller and a designated player both draw a card. Whoever has the highest card, they get the lion's share of the story points to start, 3. And then whoever got the short or the lesser draw has 2. But whenever you use one of the points, it flips over to be used by the other person or the other group. So it's kind of a give and take way to influence the story.
I like that. I don't necessarily want to introduce another thing to keep track of that we can't use a deck of cards for, since we already decided on no dice.
Okay.
What if, like, and this would be at the storyteller's discretion, if your players do something cooperative and cool, or cool by themselves, like it's a good role play, you know, any you know, system where you can just like give
inspiration.
Out like a point. Yeah. What if you take a discarded card, like, shuffle it up and just randomly give them the card, right? So then they have like a face down card and they can maybe get up to 3 at a time.
Okay. Oh, interesting. And then they can just flip it over and add whatever it is to their thing.
Either add whatever it is, or like if I can't, let's say it's a 10 and it's a body and I can't figure out a way, like we can't work together because I'm not in the scene with anybody else, right?
Yeah.
And all my cards are red, so I just can't do anything. I can flip it over, and I have 2 ways to do this. Either you just use that number, and you can add that number to, you know, one of yours.
Or if it's maybe a face card, you can use the ability of
you
it.
You can use the face card.
Or use the color as your lead, if it's a different color than, you know, if it is the same color as the task.
Yeah. Or you flip it over, and whatever it is, there's a little table, like if it's 2 through 5, this kind of thing happens. If it's 5 through 8, this kind of thing happens.
Okay.
If it's one of the face cards, like this.
So
or
the
this
wild
happens.
Magic table.
It's essentially a wild magic table, but for little animals.
You just couldn't help yourself getting a wild magic table in here.
I love chaos, Matt. I don't know if you've learned this about me.
Okay, no, I'm fine with that. I like that. Especially because that becomes
conversely, a
secret resource.
Yeah, that even you don't know necessarily what you're going to get, but it's like if you are using it, it will be a benefit, but like it's gonna be a little weird. You're going to need to figure out how you're going to use it. And then, conversely, if... let's say I need to get across this river and I can't, and like together we can't, and there's no way to get across, we can say I will get across, but then the storyteller
gets one,
gets a card in their pile.
I like that a lot.
Like, okay, mm-hmm. you get across the river, you accomplish the task. Nothing, there's no good benefits from it. Like, you know, if it's a social situation, it's like they don't necessarily do exactly what you want, or you don't super help. It's like you bare minimum.
You did the task thing. Out.
Yeah.
You did the thing, but now I have this secret resource, and then the storyteller is a different table where it's like, now there's bees, or, you know,
bees!
Not necessarily that wild. Yeah. Not necessarily that wild, but, like, you know, now I have my own kind of.
Suddenly a horse in a spacesuit shows up.
Now a horse in a space. Now there's a horse loose in a hospital. Also, if a horse showed up, it would be enormous because you're little.
It would be the hoof of God.
One of the things that I immediately thought of when I was talking about the Joker was like a hawk swooping in.
Yeah. And then but since we're playing with the same deck, like if I draw a Joker and I have a Joker in my hand, then like I can get buck wild with it. Like
the same
I need to cross this river. Boom, here's a Joker. The river dried up.
Or like a tree fell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it just like a tree fell and landed and the river stopped for long enough for me and my friends to get across.
Yep. This is okay. I'm on board. I love it. We already named it, right?
TM.
Dude, I swan to John if anyone tries to take this.
So is the god of this world a swan now?
No.
Oh, fuck, they're a mean. Swan.
So no, swans mean. Are horrible. That's the devil of this world. Yep. Satan is a swan.
The god of this world we already established is a horse.
It's a big it's a horse.
Whether
it's
or not it has a spacesuit helmet is up to you.
That's up to you. I can't. I'm not the cops. I can't tell you what to do with your horses at the table.
Look, the rabbits in the chantry definitely, you know, have the space helmet on the horse. I'm just saying.
Someone did, and it looks great. It's someone totally tries to pass it off as a halo, but we know.
We know.
Yeah, we know.
We know. We know.
All right. Well, all that's left then is to roll the magic dice. And Alan, next month is your go. So
Hold on. Before we do that. Matt, do we have any new patrons?
We do. We do have a new patron. We have one new patron this month. It's Look Who's Photogging.
That's a Cthulhu.
It sure
Thanks,
is.
Look Who's?
Yeah, we've got one whole Cthulhu patronizing us. thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We're about to do our random number doobly-doo that we always do at the end of the episodes. that voodoo that you do.
That we doobly do.
That we doobly do.
That we doobly do.
You can tell this one beer is kicking in.
Hit ya.
So we're about to record another episode right after this. It's going to be the first proper episode of our patron only ongoing thing where we talk about folk songs. Everyone is going to be able to hear this episode that we.
Everyone will get the first episode.
Yep. The first one's free. So,
first hits, for, like any good drug dealer, the first hits for free.
So if you like what you hear, and Jake is into some beers, I'm into some beers, Alan is into some cider. If you like what Buck Wild mess
style.
We come up
regular
with.
Regular style.
Then hop on our Patreon. Like, every patron's going to be able to hear this one. $1 above doesn't matter for this. You do get some different benefits at different levels. Check it out, patreon.com/hardreboot. Alan, what's that good number?
10.
10. Oh, buddy, you got a winner. This is Alan's month coming up. It's Treasure Island.
Ooh. Oh, so jelly.
God, I'm so...
Here's the thing, though. I can't do any better than the Muppets Treasure Island, and that will be hanging over my head. The entirety of this reboot.
Jake is
Treasure Island. Pirates is so good, y'all.
Pirates is so good. This is going to be amazing.
I love a Pirates.
All right. Well,
Alan, what you got? What you got for us? Genre or medium? You can do either.
Yeah, it's just the Wild West out here now.
Yeah, year three, no rules, just
or
right,
the
baby.
High seas. Huh?
Get out.
Get it?
I mean,
we're doing Treasure
Island? We're talking pirates. There were very few laws in the open ocean.
Mostly just guidelines.
Pretty much. Mostly ship to ship.
Yeah. What we got, buddy?
Oh.
Recently, we just did an RPG. We did a platformer video game. We did a comedy stage musical somehow. We did an anthology show.
That was very good.
We did a...
I keep going back to comic book. I think we're going to do a comic book.
It's been a minute since we've done a comic book. I'm fine with this.
It has been.
It's been 2 years since we've done a comic book.
Could we do a manga?
What's the difference?
There's no difference.
True.
Okay.
One is made in Japan and one isn't. And so to answer your question, no.
Because we are white people.
So comic
book. Two-thirds of us are in Texas. Yeah. And the other one is in Alabama. So
comic book.
Comic book.
All distinctly non-Japanese locations.
It's very true.
Okay.
Treasure Island is a comic book. Hell yes. I'm very excited.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yeah. Okay. Well,
now I just have to resist the urge to do the very cliche things I want to do and try to do something different.
Cliches are cliches for a reason.
I mean, you can throw them out. It doesn't necessarily mean they'll get past the filter, the great filter.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, we're going to see you next week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Next week? No.
Next month.
Next month. Woof.
We're not up to one of these a week. That's way down
we're
the
not
list
there
of milestones.
Yet. That's not even on the milestone list, but two a month is.
It sure
is. Patreon.com/hardreboot. We'll see you next time with a comic book Treasure Island. I'm fucking stoked.
Yeah.
It's gonna be fun.
I've been Matt.
I've been Jake.
And I've been Alan.
Goodbye.
And
you've been rebooted.
We've just all rolled into this now. All right, bye.
Hey, everybody. You can follow us at RebootCast on Twitter, or you can email us at hardreboot@fifthdraw.com. You can follow Alan at Alan_Sells. You can follow Jake at JJ_Mason, or you can follow me at Matt Hoadley. Thanks for listening. Hard Reboot is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 International License. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.